So you might have heard, federal aviation officials recently grounded the Tacocopter, a small unmanned drone helicopter that delivered tacos in the San Francisco Bay Area to people who ordered them on cell phones. Great idea, right? But the problem is that commercial drone use is prohibited. And that's changing. The FAA will soon issue new rules for limited commercial use of small drones and clarify and streamline the use by police departments, which can now use drones with FAA waivers. Drones were also hugely popular and legally used by hobbyists, although when anti-hunting activists recently flew a little camera-equipped drone over a hunt in South Carolina, hunters shot it down.
Are they shooting at it? Oh, dang it.
Oh.
Shot it?
Oh, yes, they did. And the FAA is investigating whether Rupert Murdoch's iPad news project, The Daily, used a drone to capture images of recent tornado damage. Now, the difference between drones and remote-controlled planes is that drones can fly without a pilot on the ground. You just set GPS coordinates. In a few minutes, we're going to hear from a security consultant who, to prove a point, built a drone that can listen in on cell phone conversation and crack Wi-Fi passwords. But first, Chris Anderson, he's editor-in-chief of Wired Magazine and a drone enthusiast who co-founded the drone parts company 3D Robotics and runs DIY Drones. That's the largest amateur drone site on the web, and joins us from KQED in San Francisco. Chris, welcome.
Hi. Nice to be here.
Are you still smiling about the buzzing drone above the hunters?
That was good audio. I hadn't heard that before.
Well, you know, a lot of people may be looking up and thinking, what is that thing, that annoying thing, and how can I get rid of it? We want to address the questions of ethics and safety. But tell us, to start, some of the uses that are happening already.
People are experimenting with crop management. Vineyards are looking at getting an aerial view of how their water irrigation is working. In Hollywood, they're using a lot as sort of basically camera platforms that can go further than a regular boom. We see a lot of it in search and rescue. We see it in scientific sensing of things like over rainforests. And, you know, eventually, once the laws are in place, you'll see a lot of it used, no doubt, by law enforcement and emergency to just get an eye in the sky. You already have aerial imagery from Google Maps or Google Earth, but typically that was done by a satellite, you know, a year ago, or was done by an airplane. Let's say you want it right now. There's no better way to get a camera in the sky than to use a drone. It's cheaper than a manned aircraft. It's safer than a manned aircraft. And if you just want to take a look at what your property looks like right now, you can do it. If your farm want to do it every morning to see the crops, you can do that. So that's in general what robotics are good at. Is jobs that are quote-unquote dull, dirty, or dangerous. And the biggest category of all that is dull. You know, a lot of search and rescue, a lot of police work is really just kind of what we call loitering, you know, waiting for something to happen. Those are great jobs for robots. They're safer. The robot aircraft can be a lot smaller and lighter. So if things do go wrong, nobody gets hurt.
Well, you also mentioned the dirty, the dangerous things that humans don't want to or shouldn't do. There's thoughts that drones could go into chemical spills or, you know, send the drone up to wash windows on a high rise or observe a hostage-taking situation, things like that. But clarify for us how they are already being used by law enforcement, because we understand police across the country do have drones. The Justice Department has 4 drones that it loans to police departments. Where are we legally on police using drones?
What you found right now with law enforcement is there is Border Patrol has used that in some cases. You know, certainly a lot of search and rescue. Often you see right now, especially outside the United States, in cases of earthquakes or other kind of natural disasters, the best way to find out is to put a camera in the sky and ideally multiple cameras very quickly, very cheaply. And that's something that law enforcement and emergency services will be and already are using drones a little bit for. But again, it's early days. The technology is still developing. They don't always have the expertise to either fly these things or maintain them. And they're constantly at risk of running into regulatory problems that they hadn't anticipated, or lashback from the community, or, you know, things crashing and going down and that being a PR nightmare. And
sure.
So I think everybody really wants a cleaner regulatory situation. It's just clear, you know, what are the rules of the road and what technology should we use?
Sure. We were just listening to that gnat-like sound of that drone. And, you know, I can hear people saying, are you kidding me? The police will have drones so that buzzing thing can fly around my house and see, you know, if I have
you
drugs or...
You wouldn't hear that. You know, typically you'll only hear that if you're
within
about 20
feet. Well, maybe it's better if you do hear
it.
You know, I mean, that, I guess my question is about privacy. What are the privacy questions?
Well, you know, there's privacy questions and there's privacy laws, and the two are not the same.
Yeah.
Law is actually quite vague and doesn't really speak to this directly. You know, the privacy is built on the sort of notion of reasonable expectation of privacy. So if you live in New York and you have, you know, you live in an apartment building, there's an apartment building across the way, you know that people can look in your windows and so you pull your blinds. If you live in the suburbs, you know, far from other people, maybe you don't assume that people are looking in your windows. And so a lot of it's context and based on sort of court precedent and what the courts believe the reasonable expectation should be in that one place. Now, you already have airplanes flying over your house taking pictures. And if you're going to sunbathe nude, there is a low probability, but a non-zero probability that Google's, you know, aircraft and other people's aircraft are going to fly overhead and get a quite fuzzy picture of some sort of flesh-colored pixelated blob in your backyard. That's already legal. It's already happening. It's just not happening often enough and high enough resolution to be an issue for most people.
Yeah.
I think these things get solved not so much by laws, because you really can't, one size fits all doesn't work in these instances, but more by precedent and, you know, society as a whole figuring out how do we feel about this.
Well, at least one reporter saw a drone and he had his eureka moment, which was, wow, why am I traveling as far and wide as I do to see, you know, a fire, or this would be great for reportage. All right, it's one thing if it's a drone doing a reporter's job, but another if it's a jealous husband tracking a wife. Although we just saw in the recent consideration of officials putting GPSs on suspects' cars, you know, the question was, is there a difference between having this mechanical thing track you or having, you know, a detective sit in a car and watch you? Will those same kinds of questions, you think, be raised about drones?
You know, I think people hear drones and they kind of project all sorts of fantasies to them. I mean, there are a lot easier ways to track, you know, your wife or girlfriend than a drone. I mean, this is really advanced technology. It's somewhat unreliable. Right now, a lot of those things you described are actually illegal. Drones cannot be used out of line of sight right now. Drones can't be used over built-up areas, including over population. So a lot of that journalism thing you described is illegal. Drones have to stay below 400 feet. You know, drones typically are powered by batteries, and batteries have quite limited range. So, for example, those helicopters that you, those quadcopters or multicopters that you played the audio of before, they have a duration of about 15 minutes in the air. So, you know, we just have to kind of get a little out of Hollywood mode and recognize that we're looking at, you know, quite immature technology that is probably the hardest way to get most of those things done you've described.
And yet you have said that we're on the cusp of a new era with personal drones, where Apple was when the Mac was invented.
I've been at this for about 5 years. But right now we have about 23,000 members of our community, DIY drones. There's more civilian drones than there are military drones. Right now I think the military has about 7,000 drones. The kind of collective amateurs are probably putting 7,000 drones out per year. And that's doubling on an annual basis. Thanks to technologies that are largely in your cell phone, which is those sensors, the gyroscopes and the accelerometers and the compass and the GPS and the cameras and the wireless and the memory and the processing, all those things that are in your iPhone or in your Android phone right now are essentially the enabling technologies of an autopilot. You know, without too much imagination, you can fly a plane or a helicopter with an iPhone.
We're talking about drones. They're not just for the military anymore. The FAA is currently drawing up rules that would allow the first widespread use of commercial drones in this country, and they're already being used by hobbyists and activists. The Swedish file-sharing site Pirate Bay, through which people swap music and videos and such, they say they've come up with a novel way to evade copyright enforcement. They're experimenting with putting their servers on unmanned aerial drones, sort of the modern-day version of those old offshore pirate radio stations that were on boats. U.S. law enforcement is already using drones, and as we mentioned, there's a community of hobbyists who've been legally building and flying personal drones. Chris Anderson is editor-in-chief of Wired magazine and a drone enthusiast who co-founded the drone parts company 3D Robotics. He also runs DIY Drones, the largest amateur drone site on the web. And Chris, you're currently building a drone windsurfing camera?
Yeah, so that's one of the fun things about the technology. Think of it as your own personal camera in the sky.
Yeah.
A copter of some sort would take off from the beach, comes out to you, positions itself 15 feet behind you and 15 feet up, and keeps the camera trained on you as you do your stunts. And then when the batteries start to get low, it flies itself back to the beach. That notion of a personal droid, which you think of as something like right out of Star Wars, is actually possible right now. It's, you know, actually technically quite easy. And it's a great way to imagine a kind of a use of drones that isn't scary, it doesn't violate any FAA rules, it's not military. It's also really fun and exciting, and what we love about this is that it allows people to think about this technology in a new context, rather than thinking of it as like, you know, raining hellfire missiles from the sky in Afghanistan, thinking of it as, you know, your extreme sports personal cameraman.
I was thinking if you were doing some extreme hiking, for instance, and you just carried one of these things in your back pocket or however you would, if anything were to happen, you could send it off to go get help like Lassie.
Increasingly, they're now using drones to do that. They send a drone out. They can, you know, drop a water bottle if necessary, or they can just kind of figure out, is this really an emergency or not? Which, you know, which again does exactly what drones are supposed to do, which is keep people out of harm's way and get a cheap, simple device to do a job rather than having to put a person in a manned helicopter at great expense and some risk.
Chris Anderson, editor-in-chief of Wired Magazine, on drones. He's a drone enthusiast. He also runs DIY Drones, the largest amateur drone site on the web, and he's co-founder of the drone parts company 3D Robotics. Chris, thank you.
Thank you.
Well, last year, two former U.S. Air Force contractors developed a homemade drone that can locate Wi-Fi networks, crack those network passwords, and listen in on cell phone conversations by posing as a cell tower. It's called the Vespid drone, and they built it to make a point. Mike Tassi is one of them. He's a security consultant who joins us from Indianapolis. Mike, you've told us you think you have maybe a more realistic view of drones than Chris Anderson. What was the point you were trying to make?
Well, I think realistic in the fact that people are going to use this technology for good and bad. The drones are just tools. They're pieces of equipment like anything else. So we need to be wary of the threat as well as optimistic about the benefits that type of technology will provide.
So is one of the reasons you made the Vespid to show what the threats could be?
Sure. The initial idea behind Vespid, both myself and Rich Perkins, my partner on the project, we're cybersecurity guys. This is what we do. We're security consultants, and the cybersecurity aspects were really attractive to us. We wanted to show what some of the new threats are going to be going forward. As this technology becomes more accessible, it becomes easier to do this sort of thing.
Well, and how did you do this? What does the Vespid do? I said that it sort of masquerades itself as a cell phone tower, but then what happens?
Well, it has several capabilities. The first and foremost is the wireless networking and Bluetooth. So what it can do is map and locate wireless networks on the ground, and through connection back to the operators, it can allow someone that's miles away access to the network. It also has the capability, like you said, to masquerade as a cellular tower and attract phones in the area to connect to it, and then the operator can then forward those phone calls, listen in, capture texts and voice traffic.
So it's like a trap. It reminds me of here, I don't know if it's elsewhere in the country, but here in New England, you drive along and you can see these huge cell phone towers in places where it's obvious that the companies had to disguise them as trees. So they have like branches sticking out of them, but you can tell they're cell phone towers with these fake branches sticking out of them. So you have this sort of, a hover plane? You know, is it a helicopter hovering around but acting like a cell phone tower?
Well, it's an aircraft. It's an airplane, not a helicopter. So it actually looks like a Russian fighter jet.
Well, Mike Tassi, I'm thinking if you've done this to make a point as a security consultant, other people have done it. People have done it already. Countries might have done it. I mean, do you imagine they have to, you know, maybe hover one, near the Pentagon and listen in on what the military's saying? Or the U.S. may have one hovering in Iran.
It wasn't so much that, China could do this or Russia could do this or Israel could do this or some other country could do this. Of course, they could do that. They have nearly unlimited funds and the brain power to do nearly anything. The idea was that this is no longer the realm of folks who have deep pockets and lots of impetus to do so. Now it could be done by your neighbor or by a terrorist group or a cartel or just a petty criminal. It just takes dedication and a little bit of time.
So given that, what do you think should happen going forward with drones? Do you think there should be more regulation of them, more concern about them?
I don't think that there needs to be an undue concern about them. I think that as with most technologies, they bring a mixture of benefits and risks, and that we don't gain anything by not talking about the risks.
Security consultant Mike Tassi, he built the Vespid drone, which can crack Wi-Fi networks and listen in on cell phone conversations, to prove the point that there are security concerns about drones that should be paid attention to. Mike, thanks so much.
Thank you.